This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
Well, welcome everybody. My name is Vernon, and I've been with Life Ministries about 12 years now, and the focus of a lot of my work has been with men and men's issues. And actually the past 8 years or so, I've been, along with another co-leader and I, we've been leading men's groups, yearly men's groups for guys struggling with sexual addictions. And so a lot of what you're going to hear today is experience that I've had with hearing from men, and also my own journey as a man. And I want to just start out here saying that because I'm speaking on this topic doesn't mean that I'm temptation free. And I know there's some older men in here. Wayne, you could probably say the same thing. And but the title is Temptations Men Face in Ministry. And I want to just outline a little bit where I want to go in the next 40 minutes or so. I want to first look at a biblical view of maleness. Look a little bit at Adam in Genesis. Then I want to build an understanding of how temptations come out of our inner struggle as men with making ourselves known, being known, our struggle with being broken, and our struggle with being agents or being responsible as men. And I think that's where our temptations come from, a lot of them. And then I want to end the time by looking at what it could take for us as men to own all of who we are. I want to give some credit to this material. First of all, my dad, Amos. I feel like a lot of who I am as a man has been a result of some courageous things that he's done. And also, Claire Schnupp has influenced me, and another mentor that I had in college, Steve Masterson. So some of the material that I'm using here today comes from that. Let's look at what the Bible has to say about maleness, first of all. In Genesis 1, God says, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. First of all, we're made in God's image. And I don't think that's news, any of us here. But as men, we're created to tell something, to tell a truth about who God is, to tell something that's true as image bearers of God. And I really believe there's a dignity that we carry as men in that reality of being image bearers. And along with being made in God's image, there was a command to rule and subdue, to be a steward. And I'm always amazed that, you know, God created, and then he lets Adam name the animals, even though God created it. So he set Adam in his creation to be a steward, to rule and subdue together with Eve. And there's a level of responsibility that we have as men, as Adam's sons. God created the earth, and he placed man over it as an overseer. And Adam was placed over God's creation, and he was also placed in relationship with Eve. And there was a harmony in that original design. It was a good thing. Male and female complemented each other in their God-ordained roles. God creates Adam out of the dust of the ground. And he gives Adam the command to not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, or he would die. In his place as overseer, God gives Adam the information, and he also gives him the command. He didn't give that to Eve, he gave it to Adam. And then we have the snake thing, right? We know the story. Sin, Satan engages Eve, and Adam is just standing there like a dunce, saying nothing, doing nothing. Sounds like us, right? Adam commits two sins in disobeying God. Adam says nothing to Satan, and he does nothing to protect Eve. There's two tendencies of many of us men, is to say nothing and do nothing when it comes to the things that matter the most to God's heart. And omission basically means missing in action. Adam was missing in action. He reaches out his hand, so there's two sins that Adam commits here. Reaches out his hand and he takes the fruit from Eve, and he listens to his wife and eats the fruit. A sin of commission. Not only does he say nothing and do nothing, Adam joins the evil. And so there's Adam's commission, or the direction that he charted was leading in places of wrong instead of leading in places of good. He was overseeing evil instead of truth. I'd like to look at some of Adam's responses, and we all know the story. But one of his first moves was to cover his brokenness. And I'm kind of laying a foundation here to think through what is our temptations come out of? And so as we look at Adam, they're going to recognize you. They're going to recognize me as men. As he tells our story. One of his first moves was to cover his brokenness. And the second was to hide from God the next time God came for an evening stroll. So he covered his brokenness, and then he hid from relationship with God. That's the second response. And the third response, I think for Adam, was to give up the ownership, to give up this overseer stewardship responsibility in the ways that he blamed Eve. And God had a response for Adam. And I don't think it's that different for us. There was a judgment on Eve and judgment on Adam. And we're going to focus on God's judgment on Adam today. Then there was a consequence for both Adam and Eve for their sin. You'll notice in Genesis that God addresses Adam first. He didn't address Eve. And I don't have this in the notes, but as overseer, I'd like you to write this down. As men, we are first to be responsible for the failure. And God was holding Adam responsible for his failure, even though it was Eve who initiated it. He called Adam's name first. To Adam, he said, "Because you listened to your wife, ate from the tree about which I commanded you, you must not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you will eat of it all the days of your life." Cursed is the ground. We're living there right now, aren't we? Cursed is your attempt at eking out an existence. And the thing, I really believe the thing that was meant to be rewarding, fulfilling, is now a burden. And I work at Life Ministries, And I don't know, we hired Mark Slaball to do our maintenance, and his job's never done. What kind of guy is that? There's maintenance, things are always breaking. There's always things, his job is never done. And I think that's true of the rest of us too. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. There's a futility that a man now lives with. By the sweat of your brow, you'll eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you'll return. Gets the emptiness of that? We're made from dust, and we're just going to end up there without redemption. There's something inside of us, men, that something about this that really ticks us off, I think, as men. There's a frustration and anger in every man because of the fall and all the weeds we have to pull up in our lives, in relationships, in our jobs, in our churches, in our ministries. It's never over. And about the time you think you're on a roll, something else comes down the pike. And it requires us, something of us. Just a little story. I remember when I was first married, I had a lot of ideals for parenting and husbanding and all this stuff. I remember my wife and I, we got along great until we first had our first child. And so we had some differences that we didn't realize in how to discipline, how to parent. Most of our parenting was similar, but how to discipline was different. And I remember going, my wife and children were at home, and I was going to a game of playing hockey. I remember just beating on my steering wheel all by myself in the car in my frustration. Well, there's a rage or an anger inside of us because of this brokenness that we never get done with fixing. I want to break this down here. Following their Adam's sin, there's several things that are true about every man and our tendencies as men. And that is, we're going to call the Adam's first response man's neediness. And the eyes of both of them were open, and they knew they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves coverings. Sin exposed Adam's vulnerability and his need. And he was, so him and Eve got sinned, and he was compelled almost compulsively to try and solve this on his own, to do something about it. And he tried to use his own best thinking about how he's going to solve his sin and his need. How many of you know what a fig leaf looks like? Not a great picture, but you get the basic shape. Imagine trying to sew this together to try and make a pair of pants, or try working in those pants. I don't think it worked very well. It probably looked like some sort of a tree running through the woods. He looked ridiculous, probably, trying to solve his own problem in his own way. And we're like him, aren't we? I want to look at a couple responses that we as men often have to our neediness. And every one of us is needy. And I'm kind of breaking this down. I'd like us to think about the things some of the temptations that we have in response to our need. So we're going to look at some temptations here. I think the first one is arrogance. There's a reality about us as men underneath. Maybe you won't see it as arrogance, but I think it one of the temptations that we have to cover our neediness, the fig leaf that we try to sew together, is arrogance. And listen to how we like to tell our own success stories, in ministry especially. There's some arrogance there. Listen to how we were tempted towards the pride and lifting ourselves up. And I don't think I'm talking here about just the reward of feeling good about accomplishment. I'm talking about a way of thinking that we don't want to face our area of need, so we try to lift ourselves up. And for example, there's some situations I've learned from experience in 12 years of counseling that I don't do very well in. And I tried to do it when I first started. I tried to do everything. There's some situations, counseling situations, that I don't do very well. And it was hard for me to admit that when Dan or Sam comes and talks to me about a case, and I think about some of the weak places in me, I'm going to have to say no. I don't have to have a good reason necessarily, but because of the way I know myself and my neediness, I shouldn't be working with that person. That is hard. That is hard as a man. Self-reliance is a second temptation. Adam figured he could fix this nakedness thing with the well-positioned leaves, right? And as men, we don't like asking for directions. We like to get lost first. And I think this self-reliance thing hits us as men in ministry, but in the ways that we try to do too much. More than we should. We struggle with our boundaries sometimes. We don't have a good theology of no. We like to say yes, I think, because we think we can do it. Third temptation is our tendency is to focus on our image. And I didn't know my dad was going to be here, so I'm going to talk about him. And I didn't understand my dad and some of his stress and tension in ministry until I started working at Life Ministries, Life Counseling Ministries. Focused on the image. It hits me when I get a referral from a pastor who happens to be a good friend of mine. Whew. I'm concerned about what I might appear like depending how this situation is going to turn out here. I want to make a good impression, and I don't want to look like a fool. And so we cover our neediness by trying to focus on our image. I want to look at Adam's second response in his man's hiddenness. I'm going to call Adam's second response man's hiddenness. And they heard the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and Adam and his wife hid themselves. And he responded later to God, I was afraid because I was naked and I hid myself. As men, our knee-jerk reaction often is to hide our inner selves in relationships with others as men. A lot of us men, and I think I'm as normal as you are. How many of us men know that generally we're not exactly how we might appear on the outside. Right? As men. If people knew what we struggle with honestly, whether it was just resentment or lust or simple depression in ministry, aloneness, fear, are real realities inside us that we don't often let people into, right, as men. And I think especially in ministry, more than other kinds of jobs, there's extra pressure to appear together, to not let anyone know what's really going on inside. It's true in our marriages, true in our parenting. I work at Life Ministries. If my marriage or my family or is falling apart, puts a lot of pressure on what I do. And yet we need to face honestly when we struggle. My wife was driving with some friends of hers recently, and they share their inner selves. And one of them asked the carload, there's three of them, a loaded question. Do you feel pursued by your husband? And so my wife was telling me this. And I think sometimes we don't pursue as men, as husbands, because of the things that are going on inside of us. And so didn't know if I should ask this, but I asked my wife, what did you say? And she said, she's wise, she's a wise woman. She says, well, what do you think I said? And I said, well, thought a little bit, and I said, well, I figure that you said sometimes, but sometimes not. And she said, yeah, that's what I said. Man's response to his fear in relationship. The first temptation in our hiddenness, in our fear, is isolation. I'm going to keep moving here. We try to insulate ourselves from the vulnerability of making ourselves known. As a pastor or ministry worker, we rarely let down our guard, never show our true thoughts and our feelings. It's hard to, as men, because of this pressure we feel sometimes. Second temptation is related, and yet it's different. It's silence. And silent about the things that matter most to the Lord and His kingdom. I remember meeting with a man several years ago, and his dad was a leader in church group. And it made me feel so sad as I sat with this man. And he said one of the things he wanted the most from his dad was to be able to sit down with him and have a spiritual conversation. So here his dad was leading all these churches, and this man had to come to Life Ministries to get his spiritual questions answered. There's a silence. We're tempted to silence. Many dads are so silent with their sons about healthy sexuality as they're growing up. And in my work with men, most dads say absolutely nothing to their sons about healthy sexuality as they're growing up. Most dads say nothing and do nothing about something that matters a lot to God. So we're tempted to silence. Third temptation when feeling fear in relationship is control. It often comes from, I think, an attempt to manage our insecurity as men. So we try to, we can control something over here, we don't have to look very honestly at our own fear. It's difficult to release control when we're afraid as men, and we're tempted to control. And it has an element of demand or entitlement. I'm owed this. You know, my my son needs to do this because I did that. Or, you know, this person I'm working with needs to respect me because of what I did over here. Control. I like to call Adam's third response, we're going to call man's blameworthiness. It's a big word, and it doesn't sound nice. The man said, "The woman who you gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree and I ate." Adam attempted to shift the blame, and so do we. Trying to shift ownership. And so when there's an accident or a tragedy of some kind, we try to see whose fault it is. And I'd like to look at a few temptations that we have dealing with our own agency as men, a responsibility. I think one of the first, I'm calling it justification, but basically it means defensiveness. One of the temptations that we have, we don't like to see ourselves as blameworthy, the owner of the problem. So we try to justify something or be defensive. As men, we can get really defensive when something we haven't handled well is pointed out. And that just happened to me yesterday. My wife said something to me about the way I responded to someone. And I managed to keep my mouth shut, but I was thinking stuff. Justification, defense, it was just right there. I am not responsible for that. Blameworthy. One of the things that happened to me in training, counseling, I did a training in Manitoba, and so we had two rooms with a one-way window in the middle. And so to practice, to learn about counseling, we would have our class of about six in the one room, and then we'd go, two of us, in the second room, and the class would watch us through the window, and they could see us and hear us, but we couldn't see them. And that's how we practiced. And so one of my supervisors, so then when we were done, to say this, so we would go to that one room, two people, practice counseling, then we'd come out of that room and walk into the lab group and get taken apart. They were observing, taking notes on what we were doing and what we did wrong and what we could have done better. And then we'd come back to the room and they'd have us for lunch. And some of you guys know what that's like. I remember one of my supervisors, as she was observing some of my responses to her critique of my counseling, was a statement she said to me, "Vernon, you seem to assume that I think you're doing a bad job, and I don't think you're doing a bad job. But I'm being hard on you." She didn't say this next part, but she was being hard on me so that I could be better. And yet I wanted to prove something. And I was in training. And that's a way, that's how we respond as men sometimes in ministry. Second temptation is perfectionism. And I like to say this, it's important that I'm right. That's what I mean by perfectionism. You know, I won't need to consider another person's point of view very far if I can determine that I have done everything correctly. If I can determine in my own mind that I might not be perfect, but you know, just close. That's our temptation. And it's easy temptation for us as Anabaptists And I think even as we relate to one another as organizations here, it's a good thing, but I think we can be tempted to comparison sometimes. Third temptation is to find a scapegoat. In the Old Testament, the scapegoat was that unlucky animal that the sins of the people were set on and released in the wilderness. And I think we do this many times as men, as we attempt to shift focus to something or someone else when we're having trouble. I'm going to keep moving here. Redemption. The Lord God called to the man and said to him, "Where are you?" When Adam was hiding, God called his name. And I'd like to look here as we're wrapping up at some of the ways God calls our name. Redemption comes through God's question and his call. God called Adam's name first. And how does God call our names today? Several things to look at in dealing with temptation. First, I believe we really need to trust God's movement, trust his activity. God is about something, and he is inviting you to be a part of the activity in your area of ministry. And our temptations sometimes come, I think a lot of times, most times come, because we don't trust what God's doing. We don't trust what he's up to. When we're frustrated with our frustrated expectations, I think one of the things as I work with men in sexual addiction, I didn't do the scientific study of this, but almost 100% of the time, there's an element of anger when a man chooses sexual acting out or sexual sin. There's an element of anger. Frustrated expectations. Relationship and personnel problems. Can God be in this? Jesus would often go away for, and I like what Merle said this morning, some of you have been in his session, Jesus would often go away to pray for hours at a time. And there was a perspective that Jesus had in his life. I mean, it was obviously God and God's Son, but he spent time with his Father, and then he knew what he was supposed to do. And I want to refer to my dad here again. All my growing up years, and I think, Dad, you couldn't tell me if it's true, but I think every year you would go away for a week to spend time with the Lord. Is that tried to? And he was using that to keep his perspective, to trust God's movement, what he was doing, spending time with the Lord. My dad would go into a cabin in the wilderness and make time and take time to hear from the Lord. And that's how, as men, we keep our own hearts trusting. We need to take ownership of our inner life as men. One of the things I like about Life Counseling Ministries is the setting and some of the, it's an invitation to personal reflection. So we do a one-week intensive sometimes when people come for a week of counseling, and I sometimes wonder, we meet with individuals twice a day for 5 days, and then when they're not in session, they're journaling, they're walking, they're reflecting, they're writing, they're listening to teaching material. And sometimes when a person has been there for a few days, I sometimes wonder what is doing the most work here, the counseling or what they're doing in their reflecting time, reflecting on their life, taking ownership, taking inventory. It's stop hiding yourself as a man from your inner life. We need more time with God. We need more time with a trusted mentor. And I think we need more time with some good men. I started this when I was about 20. I had a group of men that I, in one shape or form or another, that I met with regularly for the last 23 years. It started out, we would meet weekly. I meet now monthly with one man specifically. But I want to be making myself known. We want, as men, we need to be making ourselves known, and we need to take ownership for what's there. We need to take ownership of what's inside, our resentment, our hatred sometimes, our temptation that comes. We also need to name what is true. In dealing with temptation, we need to name what's true about us. And we need to face all the parts that make us up. So a while back, I started writing down some things about me as a man. So my parents, or my dad, would have grown up Amish, so that's part of my cultural heritage. I would have grown up in a mission setting, so that's part of colors the view of my world. I'm male. What else is true about me? I get angry. Sometimes I lust as a man. Because if we're not going to name what's true about us, it's going to be hard for us to face it. So we need to name what's true as men. Name what's true. Another thing I think that helps us in our temptation is to be open to team. In a multitude of counselors, there's great safety, Proverbs says. You know, I've been involved in a leadership team with the church that I'm a part of. And I just have been so blessed in even working at Life Ministries, how much richness there is in working at a task with the team mentality. There's so much safety there. And my experience at college was such a rich time of connecting with so many different cultures and people groups. Sharpens us. God, one of the ways that God calls us is to be open to work as a team. And the last one here, God's call for us in ministry is to lead with a limp. And we had a man that I remember as a child. We called him 10-foot Joe. And the native man. And he would, he had something wrong with his leg, but whenever he'd come around, he would be kind of walk across the room, and he could see that his whole figure would be dropping and dipping. And that's how we lead as men. We lead with a limp because of our sin, because of our brokenness, because of our lives. And God's calling us to lead even in spite of a limp, isn't he? To act in faith for God's kingdom in places where he's called us to minister. And one of the places that I felt called to minister is primarily to the broken in our church community. And so I'm in a counseling ministry, but since I've been there the last 12 years, there's some times where I've had to seek out counseling as a counselor. I lead with a limp, And we need to acknowledge that limp as we serve. As we serve the Lord. And so God's call is to lead with an openness. And I want to just mention a few resources I have. And I didn't get this to the faith builders in time, but this is a really good book for men in ministry. Leading with a Limp by Dan Allender. And I have a few up here. But it's influenced a lot of the way I think about ministry and mission. All right, well, let's just have a word of prayer. Lord, there's ways that we're tempted, and one of the things that I tried to do here today is to talk about temptation from the source, from where we struggle on the inside as men, and a lot of the ways that we act comes from somewhere. And so, Lord, as we wrap up here today, I pray that you would draw us to you, that we could live openly, without fear, without hiding. And Lord, that we'd allow you to minister to our need. And I believe, Lord, that's the ways you want us to live. That we would let you wash our feet when we're feeling needy and when we're feeling like hiding and when we're feeling like shirking our responsibility, Lord. So just help us as men to be followers of yours in the ways that honor you in from the inside. In Jesus' name, amen.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.